is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
And good Thursday morning once again. You're listening to The Steve Gruber Show. I'm Cheryl Fritz, sitting in for a couple of days here. Joining me now on the phone, Jim Geyer, who is the meteorologist at WLNS-TV6, more than 35 years forecasting weather in Michigan, including 13 years with WJR Radio in Detroit, many years in Flint, Saginaw, and thankfully 20 at WLNS-TV6, where he's a co-worker of mine. Good morning, Jim.
Cheryl.
How many cups of coffee so far?
I threw in a Diet Coke for the heck of it. But,
whoa.
I'm going back to coffee.
It was good to try, but no, let's stick with what we know. Stick with what we know. Well, the obvious outside today, as I'm looking outside, it's a little rainy. Looking at our WLNS weather app, I'm seeing some pretty good rain showers coming in, more so just north of us. Tell us about it.
Yeah, there's quite a swath of rain that's extending from, it's right across the middle of lower Michigan right now. There's an east-west band of some rain, and then there's also an area of rain that extends southward from that with some heavy downpours about ready to, it has already crossed US 127, so it's moving into Shiawassee County and will be heading into the Saginaw area too, so folks there certainly will be getting quite a soaking of rain as this entire rain pattern moves through, and this is just out ahead of a cold front, which will move ever so slowly through the state. So as long as we're ahead of it, we're going to be into mild and muggy weather. The Upper Peninsula is already in the clear as far as the high temperatures and the very high humidity, too. Their winds have turned to the northwest, so a nice little cool down there. But, boy, ahead of that front, it is humid. It's almost like walking out into a Florida morning right now. And then you add the rain on top of that too. So yeah, we're going to be in and out of rain in lower Michigan, especially the southern half, for the better part of the day.
Yeah, this was one of those when I walked out this morning and I left it. Oh gosh, I left the house about 4 o'clock in the morning to come here and stood outside at the door here for a moment before I came in. And I thought, and why did I bother to even comb my hair? It should have been a ponytail day, Jim. I know you think that all the time. Ponytail.
Well, yeah. Well, until last week, I finally got a haircut. You know?
There you go.
But yeah. It is. It's one of those bad hair days. Extremely humid, humidity between 90% and 100% in many places out ahead of that front.
When you say cold front, what are we talking temperatures?
Well, not a big drop off in temperatures, but I think more noticeable will be the drop off in the humidity, at least for a couple of days anyway. Although this front that we'll be moving through isn't going to drop very far, it does extend all the way back into the Rockies, and there's going to be another area of low pressure, another system coming in, and kind of ride along that front and then head right back up into the Great Lakes region. So after this first batch of rain moves through, enjoy a nice Friday and at least half or two thirds of the day on Saturday before this next system moves on through.
Very good. Now, of course, one of the topics of conversation today were the tornadoes in Indiana, severe weather down there. Are they in the clear? That looks like they're getting some of the rain on top of their misfortune yesterday.
Yeah, and they are not in the clear for severe weather either. I just took a look at what the Storm Prediction Center is putting out for that area. The Storm Prediction Center is really the group that's in charge of nothing but keeping an eye on the possibility of severe weather across the country. And right now, they have areas of extreme northeast Indiana and about the northern half of Ohio in a slight risk for some severe weather. And they've kind of bullseyed that area for even a slight risk of some tornadic activity from Fort Wayne over toward the Cleveland area. The northern edge of that would be around Columbus, so it looks like northern Ohio could be seeing another rough day. And they already did in northwest Ohio, too. They had several touchdowns of some tornadoes there in the northwestern part of Ohio.
Oh, gosh. It's you know, I love not shoveling things in the summertime, but it does mean some other severe weather that can be in the area. You know, when I talk to folks about you, you're kind of a Renaissance man. You like roller coasters. You're a meteorologist. One of your other passions is racing, and you'll be heading down to Jackson this weekend for the final race at Michigan International Speedway, the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, the Pure Michigan 400. How does it look for weather and fun? What's your fun prediction as well?
Well, I'm keeping a close eye on that. Have a vested interest because I'm going to be down there. People will probably be hunting me down. But, there are two races. Everything starts on Friday with qualifying on Friday afternoon for that race. And then they have the truck series is in for Saturday. So we'll hopefully get that one in before any rain does move across Michigan International Speedway down in the southern part of the state. And then for Sunday, I'm going to keep an eye on that because if everything keeps moving along, we'll have some rain then Saturday night into the first parts of the day on Sunday. They'll dry out the track and then get the race in.
Well, it's exciting. I have a bit of a history at Michigan International Speedway in my former life, as I like to call it.
Do you want to talk about it?
maybe later, but I was actually one of those trophy girls in the winner's circle, worked for Roger Penske. You didn't know that, did you?
I did not know that.
Looky there. I'll share later more. But there's so many exciting aspects to the track down there, and I'm a little geeky. I always loved watching them dry the track where they pulled jet engines around. Fire them up and dry that track. I mean, that was always fascinating to me. We hope they don't have to use them too much this weekend, though.
Yeah, in fact, they've upgraded even those the dryers there too. So that'll be another interesting thing to watch if you get there early on Sunday because they'll be out too, and you get to see how the newest edition of those dryers work.
Wow.
It's really fascinating to watch that because they go, it almost looks like in the winter, you know, you have snow plows, you know, kind of two or three at a time, you know, next to each other, and they're just plowing one large wide road. It's kind of the way that it works, you know, for drying out a track as well. You've got all these dryers that are right next to each other, staggered a little bit, and they'll just continue around and around until that track is dry.
Yeah, and you go as a fan. Is that correct? You're there as a fan. You're watching the skies, but you're there as a fan.
Usually. I'll probably be tagging along with some of the sports people this weekend as well. I help out where I can.
Well, and those are, that you know, that's some of the perks of certain jobs. And this is one of yours to go down. You're all, as you and I spoke yesterday, credentialed for the race to go down and help out with our crews from TV6 as they go down to cover the race. It's such a great thing for the state of Michigan to have Michigan International Speedway there for the excitement of the races and the folks that it brings together at a race. It's it's just great.
Yeah, and kudos to Roger Curtis, who's the head guy there at MIS. He has done so much for that track and lowering prices or just eliminating prices for kids on package deals. So, yeah, he's working real hard down there.
Love that. I think we're going to actually try to talk to him tomorrow, so I hope we make that
good
connection. Jim, as usual, love having you here to talk about all things weather and all of your interests as well. You're an interesting man, Jim Geyer.
Oh, thanks.
I'll see you in just a little bit. Jim Geyer, meteorologist at WLNS TV6. You're listening to The Steve Gruber Show. I'm Cheryl Fritz. Good morning.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
Wow, you don't get
to to the Steve Gruber Show. I just love the music that Alex picks. I just want to keep on listening. That was one of them. I'm Cheryl Fritz sitting in this morning, going to national news, to world news. As a matter of fact, Italy's Civil Protection Agency says the death toll from Wednesday's pre-dawn earthquake has climbed to 250. Searchers are continuing to go through piles of rock and sand where once buildings stood. Three towns were hard hit, including one where travelers had come for a pasta festival. Crews have been using bulldozers and even their hands to go through the debris and make some rescues. Watch some video this morning, as a matter of fact, of rescuers after working very hard, pulled a 10-year-old girl out of rubble, and she appeared unharmed physically in terms of wounds and things. And great cheers from the crowd as they rescuers pulled her out and just hugged her tight as they took her to safety. So some amazing work being done over there with folks trying to help. A 9-hour siege at the American University of Afghanistan has ended with at least 12 people dead and scores wounded overseas. An Interior Ministry spokesman says the dead are 7 students, 3 police officers, and 2 security guards. The attack began Wednesday evening with a suicide car bomb attack at the university entrance. Police say they killed the 2 attackers 8.5 hours later. Turkish Foreign Ministry says U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has told his Turkish counterpart that Syrian Kurdish forces have started withdrawing east of the Euphrates River. The pullback was a major demand by Ankara after Turkey sent forces across the border to take a key Islamic State stronghold the previous day. Turkish ministry officials say Kerry and the foreign minister spoke by telephone, and Turkey's incursion into the northern Syria was also meant to contain an expansion by Syrian Kurds. Battling ISIS militants in Syria, the U.S.-backed Syrian Kurds have been able to seize nearly the entire stretch of the border and with Turkey in northern Syria. Vice President Joe Biden warned on Wednesday that the Syrian Kurdish forces will lose U.S. support unless they retreat east of the Euphrates. At a campaign rally in Tampa, Florida, Donald Trump reached out again to minorities and people of different faiths to vote for him in November. Clip 5.
To the African-American voter, great people. To the Hispanic voter who have been absolutely treated terribly, I say, what do you have to lose? What? I will fix it. I'll be able to make sure that when you walk down the street in your inner city or wherever you are, you're not going to be shot. Your child isn't going to be shot. Evangelicals, people of religion, Christians, Jews, Catholics, Muslims, everybody, you've got to get out and vote on November 8th. And there's only one person you can vote for, Donald Trump. We're going to do a job. We're going to do it.
At a rally in Tampa, Florida, Donald Trump criticized Hillary Clinton for not being accessible to voters during her presidential campaign, her celebrity supporters, and the lack of enthusiasm of her fans.
Hillary Clinton doesn't do speeches. She doesn't do press conferences. It's been almost 300 days. She doesn't do rallies of any consequence. She doesn't do this kind of stuff where you have all these people. She's failed at filling the arenas. You look at her events. They should show those arenas. They never show our arenas packed. But they should show her arenas that are empty. People don't know where she is. Her supports have really, and her supporters have very little enthusiasm. The only people enthusiastic about her campaign are Hollywood celebrities, in many cases, celebrities that aren't very hot anymore, and Wall Street donors, special interests, lobbyists, etc., that want to control government, not to the benefit of our country, but to the benefit of their wallet. Even her protesters don't have the spirit that Bernie protesters had.
In related news to presidential candidate Donald Trump, there's actually a flash mob supporting Donald Trump planned for Saginaw Township, and there's some others throughout the state as well. On Tuesday, August 30th, supporters of presidential hopeful Donald Trump plan to gather in Saginaw Township to participate in the statewide sign rally flash mob for Trump. Saginaw County State Chair for the Trump campaign said supporters will gather at the corner of the Tittabawassee and Bay from 4 to 5:30. During the same time frame, supporters from different counties throughout Michigan will be doing the same thing. Mantley says it'll be a group sign wave and encourages local candidates also to participate. She's hoping for a big turnout. Trump visited Saginaw County's Birch Run Township on August 11th last year to speak at a Republican Party Lincoln Day dinner, a fundraiser hosted by GOP groups from around Saginaw, Genesee County, and Birch Run at the Expo Center. Presidential hopeful and business mogul Donald Trump was in Saginaw County, and supporters came from throughout the state to support him. He last visited Michigan on August 19th, just a week ago. He was in town for a rally in Diamonddale where thousands of folks show up. We did live coverage of that at Channel 6. It was quite an event out there. These flash mob events will be held rain or shine. The list of places where they're going to be held are at Muskegon County, Oakland County, Livingston County, Macomb County, Saginaw, Grand Traverse County, Washtenaw County, Wayne, Kalamazoo, closest to us here in Lansing, Jackson County, Genesee, and Otsego County. That is next Tuesday, August 30th. You can get more information, of course, on the internet to track that as well. So interesting, flash mob supporting Donald Trump planned throughout the state next Tuesday. You are listening to the Thursday edition of The Steve Gruber Show. I'm Cheryl Fritz. Good morning.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
Sometimes I'm right, and I can be wrong. My own beliefs are in my song.
Welcome back to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Cheryl Fritz, sitting in for a couple of days while Steve takes some time off. But don't worry, he'll be back here with you again soon. Going out on the phone now to Marita Noon, who is the Executive Director for Energy Makes America Great Incorporated and the companion educational organization, the Citizens Alliance for Responsible Energy. Good morning, Marita.
Good morning. It's a treat to be with you.
I appreciate that. I always like to know where people are calling from. Where are you this morning?
I am located in Lubbock, Texas. My organization, the Energy Makes America Great Inc., is based in Albuquerque, New Mexico, but I personally live in Lubbock, Texas.
There you go. Beautiful. Is it a beautiful morning this morning?
It is an absolutely beautiful morning. Yes, we've got a lovely sunrise.
I'm pleased to hear that. We're a little rainy here, so hopefully your stuff is coming our way. I found this article very, very interesting that you wrote. It's titled The Few, the Loud, the Anti-Fossil Fuel Crowd. I also appreciate the alliteration there.
I'm big into alliteration.
I like that. I like that a lot. You kind of subtitle it, if you get your news from mainstream media, you likely think the views expressed by the environmental activists represent the majority of the Americans. I'm guessing, and I've read the article, so I have a heads up, that's not actually what we're experiencing out there.
That is true. It's and I wrote the column specifically about a current situation in Colorado, although I drew in some other stories from around the country to back up my premise and some polls. Specifically, I'm addressing that on August 8th in Colorado, the anti-fossil fuel crowd had a deadline. They wanted to get two anti-fracking measures on the ballot. And in order to do that, they had to have a certain number of petitions with signatures in by 3 o'clock on August 8th, 3 in the afternoon on August 8th. So 2:30 on August 8th, they arrived with a U-Haul full of boxes, and they carried these boxes up the escalator to the Secretary of State's office. And if you watch the video, as I've done, and as there is a link to in my column on Breitbart.com and American Spectator at spectator.org, etc., you see that women are carrying these boxes, and they're like practically running up the escalator. They're so excited. And you know that those boxes are not full of petitions. Well, it turned out when they actually put all the petitions into fewer boxes that they had 50 empty boxes. And in fact, they did not have enough signatures to get this on the ballot, but they claimed that they did. They needed 98,000 plus signatures, give or take, and they turned in 105,000. Well, you might think, okay, well, that's good. That's what they need. But no, historically, about 30% of the signatures are bad. They don't qualify for whatever reason. And so they really needed to turn in about 140,000 signatures. So they failed to get it on the ballot, but yet they pulled off this big marketing caper, basically a theatrics, to try to get their message out there.
Well, and I have to tell you, in full disclosure, I work in a newsroom at a CBS affiliate here in the Lansing area as assignment editor as well, and we're guilty of that sometimes. We'll get a press release, and we will sometimes go to the events, and we've done some like these recently, as a matter of fact, on different subjects. So you go to the event because you don't want to miss it if it's actually real, but we also know sometimes it is just a photo op. It is just a publicity stunt, and we have to kind of sort through that in the process.
Well, and they understand that. They understand that you're not going to cover it if it doesn't include some theatrics. Yeah. If it was just, you know, every week they turned in a box of petitions and hoped that by the deadline they'd have enough, you wouldn't cover it. But when they have this show, so to speak, and they bring it in with a U-Haul truck, and they've got, you know, dozens of volunteers there carrying these boxes, it is definitely appears to be a newsworthy event. And on their own websites, they've claimed, yay, we did it, more than 100,000 signatures turned in, which is true. They did turn in more than 100,000. But election experts say that if you have enough votes in the populace to get something passed, you have a very easy time getting enough signatures. So they're doing these theatrics, the loud, but really there weren't enough of them to get it onto the ballot, the few. And there are many other cases. I cite three specifically in my column where similar things have happened.
And what therefore, Marita, is the real picture? If these are visually effective, these quote-unquote stunts, but not representative, what do you see as the real picture out there in terms of these kinds of issues?
Well, you know, when we look at the Keystone Pipeline, which is the most polled environmental issue in history, I think, we saw that 70 to 80% of the population was for the Keystone Pipeline, yet the environmentalists were able to effectively block its being built and make it a big national issue. So what we see, again, is the few. But why do they do this? Well, they want to get more people over their side. They want news coverage for their issues. But I believe, most importantly, that they want the legislators to think that they represent the masses. Because if you're a legislator and you think that everybody is against fracking, for example, to go to the Colorado example, and you think everybody is against hydraulic fracturing, you're not going to vote for a bill that is pro-fossil fuel, because you're going to be afraid that if you vote for this, the wrath of the environmental community, which you perceive to be huge, is going to come down on you. And they will fight you in your reelection campaign, and they will say bad things about you, and they will hurt your election chances. And I think that's really what the bottom line comes down to, is influencing legislation.
Well, and it seems, while you were just speaking, I'm thinking to myself, it's the classic squeaky wheel, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. And they are definitely the squeaky wheel, and they get the attention because of that.
And in terms of this article that you wrote, and the opinion piece that you wrote, do the folks that feel the other way, like you said, the supporters of, for instance, the Keystone Pipeline, do we need to be more effective? Does that group need to be more effective in speaking with legislators and communicating their ideas?
Most definitely. In fact, I have a section in my book, Energy Freedom, available on Amazon.com, where I talk about that. And sometimes people, during the peak of the Tea Party movement, I spoke on energy at many Tea Party events. And people were so discouraged because they would send their legislator a letter or an email or a phone call, and they would get something back that didn't even address what they talked about. And they were like, well, obviously this is a form letter. Obviously what I, mm-hmm. and then they give up. But the reality is there is someone, usually a 23-year-old, an intern perhaps, who answers the phone, and I recommend that people phone. Don't waste your time sending a letter. But that there's someone there who answers the phone in your representative's office, and that person has a list in front of him or her, and they check off the issues that people called in about. And it does make a difference when they feel like their voters care about this issue.
Very, very good. As you mentioned, your book, Energy Freedom, that's your 20th. I want people to know, Marita, where they can get more information and follow your work and your writings.
Well, I'd encourage people to go to my website, energymakesamericagreat.org. On the bottom right-hand side of the homepage is a place to subscribe where you can get my weekly column in your inbox via email every Tuesday.
Very good. Thank you, Marita. Have a great day.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
And welcome back to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Cheryl Fritz sitting in today. Going out on the phone now to Chris Pabst, who's author of the new book, Devolution. Chris is a multiple Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter and author of the best-selling Capital Murder and Investigative Reporters Hunt for Answers in a Collapsing City. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am good. I'm very well as well. And you're currently with ABC 7 WJLA in Washington, D.C., correct?
Yeah, yes. I'm an investigative reporter now inside the Beltway.
Oh,
yeah.
That's dangerous territory.
It is dangerous territory. It wasn't exactly my career goal, but this is where I ended up.
We end up where we're supposed to be, I think, somehow. And I appreciate the fact that you're taking a look at things and keeping an eye on things for us. I love the information I got to talk to you. It says my topic is, if we started a new nation tomorrow, what kind of government would we form and how could we improve on the current U.S. Constitution? And I am told you're the only author in America who's actually written his own constitution.
Yeah, so within the pages of Devolution, we write a constitution, and we challenge readers to look at it and see if this form of government that we created is possibly an improvement on what we have now. Now, it's my belief that the American Constitution is the greatest governing document ever written. But in the past 240 years, it has been changed 27 times to make it better. Are there other things that we could do to change it to make it even better than it is now? Yeah, there are. But we are so divided as a country. We are so pitted against each other by our politicians. We're not accomplishing anything anymore. So the Constitution is not going to get any more amendments to it, at least as the country is constituted now. So we kind of got this idea, and we wanted to just get people talking about it, because America is not going to last forever. Nothing lasts forever. And are there things that are happening in America now that could eventually lead to America collapsing or ripping itself apart? We already have some states that are talking about secession, and they've been talking about that for the past year or two. So while, yeah, I don't think America is collapsing tomorrow, there are some hints that 5-10 years from now, that could be a different topic that we're talking about. So we wanted to get this Constitution out there, get people talking about it, and within the pages of Devolution, you can find it. It's right there.
Well, give us some hints. Now, of course, we want people to get the book Devolution and take a look at it, but what are some of the changes that you're talking about in this?
Well, there's a few. Actually, there's a lot. Some of the main ones are, there's not many things as a society that we have done for thousands of years. But one thing that we've done ever since society began is that we've had one central figurehead, whether that be a president, whether that be a Führer, whether that be a king, a queen, a prime minister, a sultan, a czar. So in this Constitution, we don't have that. There is no one person that has more power or authority than anybody else in the country. And I start thinking to myself as I was writing this, why do we still do that? Why do we still have this government where we have one person that is all powerful. And then that one person usually ends up dividing the country because they use their power to favor one political party or one political faction over another. And we see that right now. We've definitely seen it over the past 8 years. I think we've seen it over the past 15, 20 years. And so that is one thing that we change. And we challenge readers again to look at that. And we explain why we do it and does it really make sense. Other things that we do, where I live right now, I live in Maryland, right outside D.C., in the county that I live in, the government cannot increase debt higher than 8% of the annual budget. So what that does is that limits how much debt the government can place on the people. Well, that makes a whole bunch of sense in this county. We're not in that much debt. We're doing pretty well. Why don't we have something like that in the federal government? When I used to live in Madison, Wisconsin, if you run for city council in Madison, Wisconsin, you cannot run as a member of a political party. So that forces people to actually learn about the candidate and not just be bussed into a polling station and vote for an R or D. It makes sense in Madison. Wouldn't things like that make sense in the federal government? So we look at all of the ways that local government operates in America, and we pick the things that make sense, and we transfer them to the federal government saying, we have a better country if we did some of these common sense things that are already happening in America at the local level.
Well, I have to tell you, when you were talking about a central figurehead and perhaps eliminating that, that made me a little uncomfortable, but then that made me start to think about it. It's an interesting concept.
And that's all that it is. And at one point, the American Constitution was just a concept.
Mm-hmm.
That was an interesting concept. It got put into place. And the way that this government is formed is that we don't necessarily have branches. We have three departments, and each department focuses on a different aspect of the country, the economy, the judicial system, laws, for example, and enforcing them, and then also foreign policy. And the people vote by popular vote for somebody for their representatives. It's still a representative form of government in each of those three departments. And what that does is it allows us to, in the Department for Economy, for example, we actually vote for people who are economists. In the foreign policy aspect, we vote for people that have foreign policy. For the judicial aspect, we vote for people who know about law and order. Right now, we just have a bunch of lawyers that we vote into Washington, D.C., and we expect them to know everything about everything. They have to know about the economy. They got to know about foreign policy. And these people aren't experts in these fields, but yet they're leading our country in these fields. So I present the idea that maybe that isn't the best way to move forward. Maybe we should vote for people in certain departments that are experts in that field and not people that are just politicians.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. This one I think I'm going to have to get a hold of. I just like the idea of taking a look at and examining the whole process. Where can we get some more information, Chris?
Sure. Devolution, Ken, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. You can head to my website, Chris Papps, like the beer, PappsBlueRibbon.com, or on Twitter, at Chris Papps.
Very good. I appreciate speaking with you today. Thank you so much, Chris. Have a great Thursday.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Thank you.